George and Catherine Smith. Good afternoon and welcome.
Afternoon. I think I've recovered. The did have a knee replacement last year, so that's the knee that gave out on me, Liam.
So thanks very much for lodging your submission, which we read, so you don't need to reread that out to us. But you're very welcome to speak to it and highlight key points for us.
Well, as a submission, we've been farming, or the family has been farming at Mimahel on the Wyndham Ridges for over 100 years, 705 acres. Yeah, grandson Caleb will be the fifth generation on the farm, so we're not sure. He's only 9 months old and he cried the other day when he heard a lamb calling out, so I'm not sure if he's going to make a farmer or not. I think it's the fact that the family farm's been in the family for over 100 years, and there's 10 other farms in the Mimahel district that have been in the family for over 100 years. I think this is a good indication that the families have cared for the land and they're trying to pass it on to the next generation in a good state. We've been all grass wintering for 30 years, and but we've gone back to putting in some crops. You know, we have gone to the spray and pray system for the first crop, and we always try to leave a bit of pasture on the paddock when we spray it, partly for protection to the seed. And now that we've sort of become conscious of soil runoff or contamination, it holds the soil there too, so we think that's probably a good program. We have been trying to follow up the second crop with just disking and putting in kale, and if we again, we might even go a third year for kale and then regrass after that. So that's sort of our program. I think one of the concerns is that on our home block of 448 acres, we estimated about 70 acres. It's only an estimation, we're trying to work it out. That would be too steep for cultivating now, which creates considerable problems. It means part of the paddock is can be cropped, the other part can't be. It's how you farm it when you do that. It's difficult. One thing we are keen on trying to do is to base our decisions on facts and not just perceptions. We took some water samples, but we finally found out where to send them, and it was too late, to try and find out what the water contamination might be, where it entered the property and where it left the property. And we'd like to follow up on that. We believe that Dean Carson is trying to get hold of some testing kits, and we put our name down that we could be interested in a testing kit so that we can make decisions. If we find we've got a problem, then we can backtrack and try and find out where the problem is. And we think that perhaps in the Mimahel area, the Mimahel River near Wyndham has got a few problems. Further up at Venlaw, it's far better. But talking to the farmers upstream, they say that it's coming down the Warakiki stream, the contamination. So we think that probably some testing needs to be done on the Warakiki stream to see if we can find the source of the problem. Once you find the source, then you can deal with it. And seeing the number of log trucks that come down our road every day, or 5 days a week, we're wondering how much forestry clearing is contaminating waterways too, further upstream. So that might be an issue too, that although Vendor seem to have got away with it very well, I would think, over the years, but this lot is further over from Vendor, and I'm not sure if that's causing problems or not. So we think it would be a good idea if we could set up a Mimahau catchment area and trying to find the source of any problems, and once you find the source, you can deal with facts, not just perceptions. Two of our blocks also drain into the Wyndham River, so I suppose the same thing should be done on the Wyndham side of things too, so we're dealing with actual facts and not just perceptions. If you read the water reports of the Mimahau, you would think that E. coli was a problem, and I've sort of got the impression that E. coli was all bad until you look up Google E. coli and you find that E. coli is actually good, a lot of it, and it's only the pathogens that are the problem ones. So perhaps we base too much just on E. coli by itself and not finding out where the problem ones are and dealing with them. And I do understand that it's expensive to test for the pathogens, and that's why it's not done. But there again, another place, another example perhaps where we are making decisions on things that are not necessarily a problem and not detrimental to human health. I'm not sure the Mimahau River is swimmable, but mind you, neither of the local swimming pools unless the water is filtered and chlorinated. So they're not perfect either. So testing the waters is one thing that we would be very strongly in favour of. We're not sure that riparian strips are necessarily the answer either. We know of riparian strips where the banks have caved in after the riparian strips seem to fail to hold when the heavy water comes downstream. And so sometimes those banks are actually better grazed by sheep, not their cattle, but sheep right to the banks, and they are more stable. If you put a riparian strip in and you've got gorse and broom growing in them, I'm led to believe that gorse actually contaminates the water more with nitrogen than what dairy farms do. So then you've got the problem, and it's been mentioned earlier too, of what you do with your gorse and broom. You go along, you spray it and put chemicals into the water. What's the worst? I know there's no easy answer to it, but yeah, it just doesn't seem to be the solution that we would like to have. Some of the waterways normally are only running about a foot wide and then perhaps a foot deep, so they're quite small. Not swimmable, too small. To fence or have them fenced off, 20 metres away from them is would take up too much of our land anyway. Next thing is we have people concerned about how well we're feeding our stock if we take too much land out of our grazing system. We have been this last winter, we've tried to fence off some of the waterways and just keep stock away from them. A lot of it depends on the weather at the time. In fine weather, the stock don't graze heavily to the waterways, and then in heavy rain, it's quite different. So there's a little bit of flexibility in what we do and how we manage those systems. But some of our waterways, it would just about be impossible to fence them off without fencing acres of land off with them. And I just don't know how we get around it. Just looking down through what some of the things are. Of course, there's a big difference between sheep and cattle, and I think you can get away perhaps with a lot with sheep, but you can't get away with cattle. We've only got 27 head of cattle on the farm at the moment, and we're just having to put in more water troughs and try to keep them out of waterways and fence them off just with a hot wire, just to keep cattle out. Tile drains, that was a favourite thing of my father, was to tile in any ditches we had before we cultivated the paddocks. It made it a lot easier to cultivate. Now we've got all these tile drains around the place. They're all drained right into the springs, their origins. And as far as I can see, any water coming out of those tile drains is right from the spring, as clean as it could be. But the other problem is the hollows, the swales above the water pipes, and heavy rain, there's possibly quite a bit of runoff there, which probably does reach our main waterways. That's one thing we'd like to test for, just to see if it is a problem, how much is actually going down, and then do we need to try and find a solution to a problem if we've got one. Yeah, where these tiles discharge into our little foot-wide creeks, probably does, if there's any contamination, especially down the swales, will be contamination because it's such a small waterway. If it was going into the Mimihau River, it would be totally different because it would be such a small proportion of the riverway. So in the end, I'm just not sure how much contamination that. Again, it's another thing, we just need to do testing and to know how much of a problem it is, and if there is a problem, then we need to take remedial action. One thing that did interest me was the Soil Conservation Technical Booklet of 2001, which stated 59% of Southland soil was susceptible to surface erosion. That took me back to my school days, 59 years ago, when the school teacher tried to tell us that there is soil erosion in the Wyndham Ridges. And I spent the last 59 years trying to find it, and I haven't found it yet. So I think our soil types may be different from a lot of Southland, and therefore the rules and regulations would need to be different, governing the type of land and the treatment it's had. I presume it was burnt off from Tussock long before our family went there. As a child, controlled the rabbits, and the Pest Destruction Board have kept it up since. It's only the forestry, there was no forestry on that place anyway, except we do have 20 acres in one block of native bush. I'm not quite sure how much contamination comes through that and heavy rain and into our waterways. Another thing we'd like to test for, to see if there's a problem there. So we don't have... Well, one little block does have a little bit of sandy soil, but the home block doesn't. It's no volcanic origin. And so a lot of the rules perhaps don't apply to air soil. Unless you've got any questions to throw at us.
I'm sure we will. Just make a comment on the stock exclusion rule, Rule 70.
Yeah.
You may or may not be aware that central government has released national regulations, draft regulations on stock exclusion, released earlier in the year. They've been open for submissions, and we were expecting the final central government stock exclusion regulations to be released a couple of weeks ago. They weren't, but we're advised that they might be out soon, either before or after the election. But the bottom line is that those national regulations will overrule what this plan may say about stock exclusion, and the council will pretty much have to fall in line with the national direction. So the message I want to leave you with is, we understand your concerns, but the council's hands may be pretty well tied by the national regulations. So I'm not inviting any response to that, I'm just really letting you know that's the situation. I'll see if we have any questions for you, Maurice.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify the bit about the exclusion of stock during intensive winter grazing from the stream. Are you saying that it should be 3 metres for sheep and 10 metres for cattle? Is that what you're saying?
Was that the slopes? That depended on the slope, I think. I try to remember. Cats are more familiar with the regulations than I was, but I think it's just the amount of slope.
Oh, yes. 10 metres is sufficient for greater than 9 degrees. So,
yeah.
But you also say that the class of stock has an effect too. So.
Well, the class of stock, in the depending on... A lot of air goes into tiled where the drains will be tiled, and just what the water runoff down through that, and in some cases rushes and a few other things have grown up, so it's got to get through all that before it gets to the waterway. So how much actually contaminates the waterways, that's again why we would need to do a bit more do some testing so we know exactly if it is a problem or not.
Well, it's 100 sheep, you're only wintering sheep.
Yeah, we're only, well, the cattle, our cattle are kept off the waterways, away from waterways for the cattle anyway in the winter time, so it's not really a problem for them. It's only when they, we're putting them out on grass now.
Okay. And then about this water sampling program that you're suggesting, can you give us an idea of how you would actually do that?
I think initially we'd take the, where it leaves the property, and sometimes it's draining several properties before it goes off, so we would know whether there's a problem at that point. And at that point, if there is a problem, then we work our way back and test it and find out where the problem is being created, and then try to rectify it.
How would you take into account different flows? Like?
We would. You'd have to. You'd have to, after, say, some heavy rain, and give it a few days maybe, and then go in and test it after that to see if there's a variation, and see if that's what's causing the problem or not. You'd have to monitor, that's why we need a kit of our own, or several farms have a kit that they can borrow, and try to be more specific in what's happening, and then we can deal with the problem from there.
Right. So you could do it as a group of farms? Like,
I think ideally that's why we thought of Mimi Hill catchment would be good, then we can get together collectively and work as a unit and find the problems, and then, you know, help one another to rectify any problems if they exist.
So have you haven't got one yet?
No, we haven't.
Thinking
about one? Yeah, we definitely have. I've asked the Women Catchment Group to, if they get a hold of them from Dean Carson, that we certainly would be in for one.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, when you're winter grazing the crop, what sort of good management practices do you follow?
Fortunately, at the moment, we're on reasonably flat ground, top of a hill, and there's probably very little, of any runoff, but the problem's going to arise, and in the next paddock we're thinking of cultivating, there's an acre in the corner of it we'd probably have to fence off. Fortunately, we can graze it from the paddock next door, but that's not always going to happen. I'm retiring and getting out of it before those problems arise. But your son and grandson, and they're going to have to face it, so we're going to have to try and find solutions. It's not going to be easy, but sometimes you're worse off than us, a lot steeper than theirs, so I feel for them.
So yours is essentially a hill country property?
Oh, just rolling hill country, yeah.
Gentle rolling.
Some of the places my father cultivated, I wouldn't go on.
Thank you.
I think the thrust of what you're saying is that there's good culture in the historically in your area about environmental management.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
So, how should recalcitrant, or shall we say, when farmers go bad, be identified, and what should be done about them? See, I think what you're suggesting is a culture, and I'm saying, is that sufficient to identify poor performers environmentally, and what would you do about them?
Well, we did have a lady in the district, she sold the farm and moved on. She was only there for a few years. She calculated that if she moved the fences another metre closer to the ditches, she would gain so much more land. It was bad practice. You would avoid that type of thing happening.
Short of rules, how would you identify?
I know that a few basic rules that give an indication, and I think you've got to have it, because that gives people an indication of what's possibly needed, and farmers try and work from that. Yeah, that's why we like to do the testing, because then we know if there is a problem. And
if we could get, if it's a catchment, we could get the Mamahau River right.
Then yeah, we'd like to improve that if we can.
And it comes in from Otago and it's not tested before it starts in Southland.
Have you had any advice on how often and for how long you would have to test before you had a pattern that you could rely on?
I haven't had advice. I've heard people suggesting that they do it sometimes, actually even a few hours. I hadn't envisaged that. I would have thought that unless you've got a particular weather conditions you want to follow up on to see if that's created a problem, monthly I would have thought would have been adequate. I could be wrong, I'd have to learn on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've made comment here under the Farm Environment Plan Rule 20. I take it that you don't have one, but I am assuming that your son and grandson might need to actually have some sort of farm management plan.
We've got a plan in our mind. We're sort of thinking our way through. We need to sit down and nut it out in writing and try to work out where we're going and what the future plan is.
Have you seen what's written? Have you seen the Appendix N, which we referred to as the plan within the plan, as it were? Does that cover the sorts of things that, as you say, is in your mind, but did it cover the sorts of things you would expect to see in Appendix N?
I'm not sure you've seen you.
I don't like the overseer program. I think it's got a lot of problems too.
Have you run overseer on your property?
No, we haven't. But there's a few comments that the people that wrote it are saying that they didn't write it for a regulation purpose and that it can't be applied to every situation.
Yeah, we're very aware of all those comments.
Yeah. I thought you would be.
Yeah. Just for clarification, my last question is, you've talked about spray and pray.
Yeah.
Now I take it that's on relatively flat to roll, easy rolling country that you spray and pray, against what we've heard from other submitters has been the very steep country is sprayed and prayed. Is it you're using it on?
Yeah, no, we haven't done anything very steep.
So that's your farm practice?
That has been your practice in the last, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years.
Driven by what?
Oh, simplicity in a lot of ways. Sage cultivating, we've got a reasonable crop following it. I didn't think it would work the first time I saw Hamish do it, but then I had to eat my words after.
So as a result of that, you're actually saying, am I correct in saying that looks, environmentally, it looks like a good practice?
It looks good, environmentally it looks good. Yes.
But it wasn't as you started out. But
no, it wasn't how we started out. But since they've become more aware of environmental issues, we're more convinced that it is a good environmental.
So where do you get your environmental information from? Where's your sources of communication for what's good practice, what's bad practice?
Just mainly what we read in magazines and what other people are doing, and we just try to gauge our operation from that.
And have you spent time with any Environment South and sustainable staff?
We haven't, but it's in our plans in the future. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we go to Wyndham catchment and we try to learn from their experiences, but that's still, we don't think, adequate for what we probably do need to be doing as individuals and as perhaps a tighter Mamahau district.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I have no further questions, but thank you very much for taking the time to prepare your submission and coming and speak to us.
Good, thank you.
Thank you.